Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Jill Robbins and Anna Mateo. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Jill Robbins.
Some wealthier Western nations have begun easing restrictions to guard against the new coronavirus. Many developing countries want to ease their coronavirus restrictions, but they cannot afford to make a mistake. Developing countries often lack the necessary tools, such as a strong economy, good hospitals, and the ability to do a lot of testing. They need these things to overcome the pandemic. Across Europe, people have been debating how best to ease the restrictions. Yet such a debate seems unthinkable in countries affected by conflict, corruption, or poverty. Lebanon, for example, is a small country with a huge amount of debt. It has a weak healthcare system and an angry population. A month of coronavirus restrictions has sent tens of thousands more Lebanese into poverty. The government is under pressure to ease some of the restrictions. Medical supplies are so limited, however, that doctors are calling for the measures to stay in place. Lebanon was one of the first countries in the Middle East to close schools and restaurants because of the virus. On March 16th, Lebanon entered a total lockdown until April 26th. Its prime minister asked for patience as the country faced an enormous economic price. The International Monetary Fund reported last week that Lebanon's economy may shrink by as much as 12% in 2020. That would be the largest economic downturn in the Middle East. The situation is similar in many other developing countries. Easing lockdowns could increase infections and set off a serious medical crisis. At the same time, keeping restrictions in place risks more economic losses and social unrest. The inability to test and a government unwilling to be truthful could lead to bad decisions, warns Rabah Ariski. He is chief economist for the Middle East and North Africa at the World Bank. Ariski worries that easing restrictions too early could do more harm than good because there is a lack of clear information, he explained. Even wealthier nations are also worried. Germany has Europe's largest economy. Last week, German officials announced a small easing of restrictions, which includes reopening most stores. But Chancellor Angela Merkel warned that restarting the economy too quickly could lead to problems with the healthcare system. Western nations are facing severe economic problems, but their effects are eased by large government financial aid programs. For example, the United States has a $2.2 trillion program. The EU countries have agreed on a $550 billion program. The international community is offering help to poorer nations. The International Monetary Fund, or IMF, said it is prepared to lend $1 trillion to poor nations. the world's richest countries agreed to temporarily suspend poor nations' debts, mainly in Africa. Pakistan's prime minister has appealed to wealthy countries and international organizations to simply forgive the debts of poorer countries. The IMF gave Pakistan $1.5 billion in emergency financing to help with the pandemic. Some developing nations have decided they can no longer wait and are lifting restrictions for some industries. In Malaysia, the government permitted its semiconductor and other major industries to continue operating. Colombia permitted coal producer Drummond to restart part of its operations on April 9th. In Yemen, Libya, and Syria, years of conflict have led to humanitarian disasters. In all three countries, the level of coronavirus outbreak is unknown. There is a lack of testing, medical supplies, and trained healthcare workers. I'm Jill Robbins.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Much of the world was caught off guard by the new coronavirus. In many ways and in many places, governments, healthcare providers, and average people were not ready. Some hospitals, doctors' offices, and emergency workers found themselves in short supply of personal protective equipment, also called PPE. Local officials in many parts of the world suggest wearing a face mask in public. A simple cloth face covering can help to slow the spread of the virus. But face masks can be hard to find. High-quality ones used by professionals need to be reserved for healthcare workers. So, people are making their own. You can make your own cloth face mask from common household items. To help guide people, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in the United States has how-to tips on its website. The website explains that cloth face coverings should do the following. Fit securely but comfortably around the side of the face. Be secured with ties or ear loops. Include two or more layers of fabric. Permit for easy breathing. Be able to be washed and dried without damage or change to shape. Health officials recommend using 100% cotton for a face mask. Now, for those people who cannot sew, there are ways to make no-sew face masks. The CDC shows two ways on its website. One uses a cotton t-shirt. The other method uses a coffee filter. Here is a step-by-step process for making a face mask from a 100% cotton t-shirt. However, if you do not have a 100% cotton t-shirt, you can use other materials that are easy to find. You will not need string to tie it around your face if you follow the directions. You will use the t-shirt fabric to make tie strings. Here is what you will need: cotton t-shirt, scissors. Step 1. First, cut 18 to 20 centimeters from the bottom of the t-shirt. This will leave you with a double-layered rectangle of fabric. Step 2. Keep the fabric doubled. From only one edge of the fabric, cut out an inner rectangle about 15 to 17 centimeters wide. This will leave the outer edges on the top and bottom as tie strings. Step 3. Fit the mask securely over your nose and mouth. Tie the fabric strings around your neck and over the top of your head. The next face mask uses a bandana or scarf and a common kitchen product, a coffee filter. Here is what you will need: a bandana or a square cotton cloth about 50 by 50 centimeters, a coffee filter, rubber bands or hair ties, and scissors if you are cutting your own cloth. Step 1. First, cut the top off of a coffee filter. The one pictured on the CDC website is a cone-shaped filter, but you could use other shapes as well. Step 2. Lay out your scarf or bandana and find the center. Step 3. Place the cut piece of coffee filter in the center of the folded scarf. Fold the top down, then fold the bottom up, so the coffee filter is folded inside the scarf. Now the scarf is a narrow rectangle. Step 4. Put rubber bands or hair ties around the scarf rectangle. Place them a little more than 15 centimeters apart. Step 5. Fold the sides into the middle. Tuck them in so they stay in place. Step 6. This will make a narrow rectangle with ear loops on either end. Step 7. Fit the mask securely over your nose and mouth. Slip the ties, rubber bands or hair ties, over your ears. Health officials say to remove a face mask from behind. Do not touch the front of the mask. The CDC says to avoid touching your nose, mouth, and eyes. Also, wash your hands immediately after removing it. Other health experts add that you should store the used mask in a plastic bag and not touch it again until it is cleaned. The CDC suggests that you wash your masks after each use. CDC experts say that a washing machine should be enough to kill the virus. However, other health experts say that may not be enough. Some suggest cleaning the masks for 10 minutes in boiling water or in a bleach solution before washing. If you do not have a washing machine, hand wash with soap and hot water. Not everyone should wear a face mask. Cloth face coverings should not be placed on young children under age 2. Also, people should not wear a face mask if they have trouble breathing or are unable to remove the mask without help. Wearing a cloth face mask may reduce the risk of becoming infected with the new coronavirus. However, the CDC and other health organizations give this important warning. Cloth masks should be used with other methods, such as social distancing, hand washing, and staying at home. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We continue the story of the presidency of Ronald Reagan. Soon after his presidency began, there was an attempt on his life. A gunman shot President Reagan in March 1981. Doctors removed the bullet. He rested, regained his strength, and returned to the White House in 12 days. The new president wanted to reduce the size of the federal government. He and other conservative Republicans wanted less government interference in the lives of Americans. President Reagan won congressional approval for his plan to reduce income tax rates. Many Americans welcomed the plan. Others were concerned about its effects on the national debt. They saw taxes go down while defense spending went up. To save money, the Reagan administration decided to cut spending for some social programs. This pleased conservatives. Liberals, however, said it limited poor people's chances for good housing, health care, and education. President Reagan also had to make decisions about using military force in other countries. In 1983, he sent Marines to Lebanon. They joined other peacekeeping troops to help stop fighting among competing groups. On October 23rd, a truck carrying explosives bombed Marine housing at Beirut International Airport.
There was nothing in its appearance to suggest it was any different than the trucks or cars that were normally seen on and around the airport. But this one was different. At the wheel was a young man on a suicide mission. The truck carried some 2,000 pounds of explosives. But there was no way our Marine guards could know this. Their first warning that something was wrong came when the truck crashed through a series of barriers. The guards opened fire, but it was too late. The truck smashed through the doors of the headquarters building in which our Marines were sleeping and instantly exploded.
241 Americans were killed. Two days later, Marines led an invasion of the Caribbean island nation of Grenada. Communist forces were rebelling against the government there. Cuban soldiers were guarding the streets. President Reagan said he feared for the safety of American students at a medical school in Grenada. He sent the Marines to get them out safely. The Marines quickly defeated the communist forces. Many Americans were pleased. Others were angry. They said Grenada was invaded only to make people forget about what happened in Lebanon. The next year, 1984, was a presidential election year. It looked like no one could stop President Reagan. His warm way with people had made him hugely popular. He gained support with the military victory in Grenada. And by the time the campaign started, inflation was under control. The Republican Party renominated Ronald Reagan for president and George Bush for vice president. There were several candidates for the Democratic Party's nomination. One was the first African American to seek the presidency, Jesse Jackson. He was a Protestant clergyman and a longtime human rights activist. The candidate who finally won the nomination was Walter Mondale. He had been a senator and had served as vice president under President Jimmy Carter. The vice presidential candidate was Congresswoman Geraldine Ferraro. It was the first time a major party in the United States had nominated a woman for national office.
Tonight, the daughter of working Americans tells all Americans that the future is within our reach if we're willing to reach for it.
One issue in the election campaign was taxes. Political candidates often try to avoid talking about taxes with voters. But former Vice President Mondale did talk about the issue. He said taxes would have to be raised to pay for new government programs.
The American people will have to pay Mr. Reagan's bills. The budget will be squeezed. Taxes will go up. And anyone who says they won't is not telling the truth to the American people.
This was a serious political mistake. President Reagan gained even more support as a result. The two candidates agreed to debate on television. During one debate, President Reagan looked old and tired. He did not seem sure of his answers. Yet his popularity was not damaged. On Election Day, he won 59% of the popular vote. On Inauguration Day, the weather was bitterly cold in Washington. All inaugural activities, including the swearing-in ceremony, were held inside. President Reagan's first term began with an attempt on his life. 6 months after his second term began, he faced another threat. Doctors discovered and removed a large growth from his colon. The growth was cancerous. The president was 74 years old. Yet once again, he quickly regained his strength and returned to work. For years, the United States had accused Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi of supporting international terrorist groups. It said he provided them with weapons and a safe place for their headquarters. In January 1986, the United States announced economic actions against Libya. Then it began military training exercises near the Libyan coast. Libya said the Americans were violating its territory and fired missiles at them. The Americans fired back, sinking two ships. On April 5th, a bomb destroyed a dance club in West Berlin. An American soldier and another person were killed. The United States said Libya was responsible. President Reagan ordered a bombing raid on the Libyan cities of Tripoli and Benghazi. Muammar Gaddafi escaped unharmed, but said his adopted daughter was killed. Some Americans said the raid was cruel. Others praised it. President Reagan said the United States did what it had to do. The president also wanted to intervene in Nicaragua. About 15,000 rebel troops, called Contras, were fighting the country's communist government. President Reagan asked for military aid for the Contras. Congress rejected the request. In fact, it banned all aid to the Contras. At that same time, Muslim extremists in Lebanon seized several Americans. The Reagan administration looked for ways to gain the release of the hostages. It decided to sell missiles and missile parts to Iran in exchange for Iran's help. After the sale, Iran told the extremists in Lebanon to release a few American hostages. Not long after, serious charges became public. Reports said that money from the sale of arms to Iran was used to aid the Contra rebels in Nicaragua. Several members of the Reagan administration resigned. It appeared that some had violated the law. President Reagan said he regretted what had happened, but he said he had not known about it. Investigations and court trials of those involved continued into the 1990s. Several people were found guilty of illegal activities or of lying to Congress. No one went to jail. Most Americans did not blame the president for the actions of others in his administration. They still supported him and his policies. They especially supported his efforts to deal with the Soviet Union. At the beginning of his first term, President Reagan called the Soviet Union an evil empire. To protect the United States against the Soviets, he increased military spending to the highest level in American history. Then, in 1985, Mikhail Gorbachev became the leader of the Soviet Union. Reagan and Gorbachev held four summit meetings in Geneva, Switzerland, Reykjavik, Iceland, Washington, and Moscow. Each leader agreed to destroy hundreds of nuclear missiles. President Reagan also urged General Secretary Gorbachev to become more democratic. He spoke about the Berlin Wall, which communists had built to prevent citizens from crossing between East and West Berlin.
General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
About this time, a new sense of glasnost, or openness, was beginning in the Soviet Union. It was also a time of perestroika, or restructuring. The American economy grew rapidly during Ronald Reagan's presidency, but at the end of his second term, many Americans were concerned by what he left behind. Increased military spending, together with tax cuts, had made the national debt huge. The United States owed thousands of millions of dollars. The debt would be a political issue for presidents to come. Yet Ronald Reagan will be remembered as one of America's most popular presidents. Above his burial place at the Reagan Library in California are these words which speak to Reagan's belief in humanity. I know in my heart that man is good, that what is right will always eventually triumph, and there is purpose and worth to each and every life.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.